Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Today, we're for our third session. We're over at Stephen B's Fiber Studio in South Minneapolis, off of Chicago and 34th. Stephen is a fiber artisan that is armed with a wealth of experience, a daring sense of style, and a firm belief in the transformative power of creativity that knitting or crocheting offers to all who are brave enough to push the boundaries. We have discovered that he actually is the rock star of knitting. You could even call him the Rod Stewart of knitting. He loves that. Stephen began his career early as a young boy, furiously knitting lines of sequin dresses for a discerning clientele of Barbies in Wisconsin. This naturally led him to become a star student in fashion design at both Partisans and the Fashion Institute of Technology. I think his ability to market and love the stage, he's open to teaching and sharing his knitting world with all those who are listening is very inviting. And it's also not only resurrecting knitting and crocheting in the field, but it's also kind of transforming the way in which people knit and look at knitting. Wouldn't you agree, Stephen?
Yes, I'm here to inspire. That's what I get up every day to try and do, not only to myself, but those around me.
Absolutely.
And sometimes my staff just rolls their eyes at me and like, oh, here he goes again. But it keeps me fresh and effervescent.
Or how long were you in the business by yourself alone? And when did you hire your first employee?
Well, it was my sister and I in 2003. Well, it was really my sister. I was away. She was setting it up and then opened the store, a soft opening in the summer of 2003. And I came full on in August then. And it was the two of us. And then we hired my friend Bibi. She was great. She didn't speak much English, but she was really good at reading my mind. And then, I don't know, I was always there. We were always open 7 days a week. So I must have worked 7 days a week. Hired Lori, who was a great knitting teacher. My little shop in Rosemount. You know, it was like 1,200 square feet, so packed to the gills with yarn. I look at the pictures now and I'm like, oh my God, what a mess. And it gradually grew, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. At one time, we had 22 employees when I had both stores going. And now we're, you know, settling anywhere from 12 to 15, seasonal 17. But that's.
And you're in a, what, 6,000 square foot?
Yeah. Yeah. Store. There's a couple thousand, 2,800 square feet each floor.
Okay.
And then there's other rooms and corners and nooks and crannies and fun spaces.
So, where did you get your advice about managing people and employment law?
Well, it's funny because I managed people in my corporate life as design director and vice president of design merchandising. So I had merchandising people, marketing, and design staff all the way from the creative to the technical side of it. But if I didn't get along with someone, I fired them and moved on and hired someone new. And it doesn't work as well that way in it's not as black and white in
when you own your
business.
Own store.
Yeah.
Because you develop a deeper relationship with people.
Yeah, it's a family. And everyone has their issue. And as the older I get, I find I'm less tolerant of issues. Sometimes I feel like an adult babysitter. But I love the personality that each person brings. And everyone has their talent. And what I've learned is how to focus in on what they do well and how to foster that. And like, okay, let's find somebody better to do the part that they don't do as well, which is true of myself as well. You know, I try to find strong people that do the things I don't like that actually like doing it, mm-hmm. like bookkeeping and that kind of stuff. I'm
sure.
Really good with numbers. I did all my own books for the first 9 years. I'm good at it. I just now, as I age, I don't like doing it as much.
Yeah. And what happens, how many nights are you up worried about cash flow?
I'm fortunate. I've never had a cash flow problem. I always manage to keep a very large nest egg available. I don't know. I started out from day one never being in the red. So I'm kind of a unique thing. But I also learned from my mother not to put it on charge cards. And ironically, my mother's my best friend and also my financial advisor. And she's like, just stop buying. and she's bailed me out a couple times when I overbought. If I ever got into that situation. So I've been very fortunate in that sense. I don't have a, budget to stick to.
Like projections.
Yeah. So I've really spent the first part of my career in this small business buying from my heart rather than my head. And I guess you get slapped a few times. You eventually learned how to think more thoroughly. And just because a new yarn comes in eight colors doesn't mean you have to buy them all eight, because there's only going to be five sellers and three best sellers and one best. So I've learned that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's their yarn changes and it ages, and a bit like ripe bananas, is something that's hot this season may not be so hot next season. And I never had sales for the first years. I thought, oh my God, that's a great yarn. I can figure out something to do with it. And pretty soon I ended up with this backlog of inventory. So when I closed the Yarn Garage and merged it with the Stephen B. Venue, because I decided I needed to own my own store rather than rent.
Yeah.
I'm not a good renter. I don't follow rules well. And if I want to change something, I'll just get up at midnight and start painting the walls lime green. I just do it. So I wasn't a very good renter.
Well, it's more cost effective in the long run for you to be able to own your space.
I looked for 2 years for this current building, the firehouse. And when I moved in this area of town, it wasn't very nice. It was a little gray. And but I didn't know that it was in the midst of gentrification as well, like me. And it's just been a great fit. Pillsbury House is across the street, and they're a wonderful venue for anybody that's coming from somewhere that's growing, that's wanting to learn, wanting to be in theater, children, and we donate. So I have my own foundation as well. I opened that shortly after I did an LLC for this building. And so I have an S Corp and an LLC and a nonprofit. My nonprofit is Stephen B. Creative Community. And our goal was to provide a charitable opportunity creative for the community. Stephen B. Creative Community, SBCCF. And so it's kind of threefold. We're the home base for Hats for the Homeless Project of Minneapolis. So every year we gather thousands of hats. And then we started out, it started out as a few hundred that we went out on my birthday, which is Christmas Eve, and handed out to the homeless.
Oh, what a beautiful tradition.
Yeah. And now it's grown. Last year we had 3,500 hats, 3,500.
Wow.
So it's, we start earlier now as it gets cold. We'll be out going out this week. We go to Mary Jo Copeland's, Sharing and Caring Hands, People Serving People, and any group that is looking for warmth. And it's grown to hats and scarves and baby blankets. And the group comes, a volunteer group run by Barb Mellum. And they sorted the hats last week from men's, women's, and children's.
Oh.
And they're all in one of my stash rooms in big, huge bags right now. And so we'll go out over the holiday season and dispense them as needed. So that's one branch of my foundation.
That must be just a great experience.
Well, it was kind of weird for me because I grew up thinking I was all that in a bag of chips. So, I was pretty special. And my mother fostered that I was special. And my birthday's on Christmas. And I swear for the first 5-6 years, I thought that was all about me.
And then
someone said, oh, no, there's this guy called Jesus. self-centered, entitled, spoiled. I never knew that we didn't have a lot of money. I thought we had lots of money when I was a kid because I was so spoiled. But as I grew up and I thought, oh, these lazy people that out there, why am I going to make hats for them? And then I did it and I went there and handed them out and I started crying. And it was such a turning over a new leaf or whatever you want to call it, experience of awareness that there's people in all different walks of life and all different situations, and any little bit that you can use your good fortune to make their life situation better is well worth the experience. And it broke me down, and I still get tears today.
Oh, that's good. Well, that's humility, right?
Right.
We need that.
And then in addition to the Hats for the Homeless, we gather yarn and needles, and we go out to churches and schools and give it to anybody asking for it. If they want to host a knitting program for someone that really couldn't afford it, for years, I did a people living with AIDS knitting program, and I donated all the merchandise. So we do that. And then when we have a reserve in our foundation resources, we donate it to a local charity here in the area.
Nice. It's a beautiful dimension to your work and adds a different focus as you're, the more you do this, you know, the longer you're in business, you want to keep changing and growing and shifting.
We mentor.
What are your biggest concerns about small business ownership?
Small business ownership. Well, I think in today's economy, it's a challenge. I think the giants of the world have kind of made it hard for small business. I know Sam Walton's original viewpoint were Walmart to eliminate all small businesses. He said that in the 60s. I don't remember what the exact quote was, but it was to that effect. And it did have an impact. People are used to shopping, mass merchants, filling the cart with lots of cheap, quick, fast now. And I know some families that they have to clean their house out every once in a while in garbage bags because they've got so much stuff.
That they never use.
Or they use once, or clothes are disposable now, which is why I got out of the fashion industry. And I experience it here every once in a while. Someone will come in and see a gorgeous knit hat with a fur pom-pom on and go, how much is that? And I'll say, oh, let's see, the yarn was 72 and the pom-pom's another 40, 120. And they're like, oh, I don't think it's the right color, you know, because they're expecting target price points of $14 and $19.99. And yeah. I don't work for that. Mm-hmm. I don't go through all this process to compete in a price sensitive world. So that's been a challenge. You know, you buy online because everybody's shopping for the cheapest, which I already talked about in a previous episode about how I do online differently. And as a small business owner, I think today is challenging. You know, I'm trying to get health insurance right now for myself, and it's very hard, and it's very, very expensive. I'm up to almost $1,000 a month now for myself personally.
Oh my gosh.
And there's one option. There was only one option for me to choose from for insurance options. And I had been going to Mayo Clinic for some nerve damage, and they canceled it. So I can't even go to my original facility anymore. So those kind of things I think are really challenging.
Yeah.
There's no way you can apply for any subsidy or any of the things that an average person that has an employment job can do, because your business...
That's a good point.
Your business profit filters down into your personal income, and your number looks a lot larger than it really is. And I always argue this, and it's like, I'd love some assistance on this medication or something, but you can't, because the $40,000 or $50,000 or $60,000 you pay in business tax comes in as income.
Right.
Even though that money went to pay taxes, I don't have it. I never had it, but it filters down to your personal income. And so all of a sudden I'm making $70,000, $100,000 a year. I mean, I'm like, oh, but I really only have $30,000 in the bank.
Yeah.
And so that kind of setup makes it very hard. And I'm in between that. I'm not small enough to be small business, and I'm not big enough to be where I need to be.
Yeah.
So it's a challenge. So you have to have a real passion for what you do.
Yeah.
I work 7 days a week still. I'm trying to take a day off now and then for personal day, but at least I'm in the position where I can hire staff and I can cover that staff. And I try, you know, I'm always sure that there's money in the bank to pay that payroll. So right after payroll's paid, I make sure right away there's money in the, I don't touch any money until there's enough to cover my employees, because I feel that's an obligation I've committed to and a responsibility that I have. And I'm trying to, I mean, I don't think in retail brick and mortar, we're on a growth cycle right now.
Yeah.
So we're going to focus more of energies online, and the retail store has become more of a showcase we have a lot of tourists, a lot of visitors. I go out nationally and teach. So those people are coming in when they come through town.
Oh, nice.
It's a showcase for what I do. Mm-hmm. And I think more and more the online and the offsite business that I do is going to have to support the retail brick and mortar.
Okay.
That's kind of, but I'm not taking it as a negative. I'm restructuring,
as you get information, mm-hmm. you're restructuring.
Yeah. I think it's
always,
I don't know, sports analogy. I'm not good at them because I don't know jack about sports, but you're always having to look at where the hole is and where the opportunity is and where you can get ahead and how to be a winner.
Yeah.
And I think it's an everyday cycle. And I think people that stick into their rut, stuck in a rut, can complain about how bad business is. I don't think anybody has a right to complain about how bad business is. I think you need to change with the times.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you need to be aware and constantly on guard and constantly analyzing. And I don't look at the other's yarn shops as competition. I wouldn't never do that because I'm a different ilk and I'm a different concept. And I look at companies that are successful like Google or Apple for inspiration. And how did they do it last? And how can I reinterpret that for my business?
Oh, yeah, that's a good way to do it.
I look outside my circle of knowledge and look to others. I kind of think I'm pretty smart and pretty good, but I know there's always someone younger, faster, better out there. And why not be inspired by them?
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you take care of yourself and rejuvenate? And
I'm not really very good at that, I have to admit. Anybody that I work with, whether it's a massage therapist or what was I doing recently, acupressure, they all start out with what I'm doing wrong. I don't drink enough water. I don't eat right at the right times with the proper food. And I don't rest enough. And it's like there's nothing I do right in that category. Mm. I drink too much coffee. But I don't know. It all makes me tick. So I keep in mind that I should be healthier. And I'm well aware of what I'm not doing right. But I don't necessarily do it right.
Okay. And are you curious to maybe take a look at that in the future?
Oh, I think about it and look at it, and it's brought to my attention often. I'm not sure how or why or if I should change it.
Okay.
Sometimes things work for people, and
yeah,
I'm aware of my dysfunction and I'm aware of my challenges, and I think that's each person's responsibility. I think you could, if you're aware, awareness is the first part of that.
Yeah.
And then you can choose what parts you want to change or if you should change them. And what doesn't work for you? Like, I have people that come into the retail store and they're belligerent and demanding. And I'm like, really, that works for you? I want to say, you know what? Why don't you go home and think about that a bit and find a different approach?
I like your circular finger movement.
Yeah. Because I can identify it in others, and I've gotten hopefully better in identifying it in myself.
Yeah,
so for instance, this morning I came in and I'm like, okay, everybody, I'm not in a very good mood this morning because about three things have happened that have got me irritated. So I'm going to be trying to be nicer than I think I'm going to be. Okay? I'm giving you a heads up.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing. And it gets me in a lighter mood by just saying that.
Absolutely. I find that for myself, that if I let people know that I'm really a crank, then I almost am like, oh, okay, well, now that I've said it, I can actually let it go.
Let it go.
Yeah.
Let it totally. Go. Absolutely. Yeah. Let it go. It's not working.
Good.
And that's probably a challenge for retail for me, is the diverse personalities and the quirkiness and bad habits that the mass market has taught people how to shop.
Yeah.
They're demanding, want everything, and they want it cheap and they want it now. And I'm like, okay, everybody, let's all take a deep breath.
Yes.
Let's calm down, sit back, and let's enjoy while you're here. Because this is not Walmart or Target.
Yeah.
This is Stephen B. And there's a lot of personality here, and there's a lot of people here, and we all got to get along. So when people are, they forget that, and they're like, oh, wow, sorry.
Yeah.
It's calming. It's a different place than the store where you're expecting results instantly.
Well, and there's always a place for businesses like that. I don't care how big our industries get, or people like places that they can go where it's their part of their neighborhood.
Yes, I hope so. And I hope that's what's going to keep us alive. So in this world of structure of small business and everything that's going on, I think our strength is always going to be service and personality.
Yeah.
So we are more of an event, and the reason you come here is for an experience. And so that's my personal journey as well. I have so much tangible stuff. I have stuff. I have over 400 pairs of shoes, and I have two rooms in my house that are only rolling racks of clothes because I've shopped all around the world. And I told you the story earlier about my Monte Carlo shoes that I have on. So I decided at one point, I was like, okay, first of all, you need to go and edit because you have too much stuff.
Yeah.
And then you need to think about it because I don't need more stuff.
Yeah.
I need experiences. True. So I now only shop where it's an experience. So I don't shop for any commodity goods, and I don't need to attend a department store Friday only sale because I don't need anything that badly. Mm. So I really like to express that to my customers. Come here because of an experience,
yeah.
Because you're enjoying it. And don't just buy more to buy more. Like, does it make you feel good? I shop because it makes me feel good. But then when you leave here with your merchandise, it's a continuation because you get to work with it and you get to make something with it. And while everybody else is watching around sitting in the boob tube for 4 hours, you've made a hat.
Yeah.
And so there's gratification in the end result. And I also encourage people to enjoy the journey because we get so hyper about the journey and getting to the end result. And you know what? I don't know if the destination's ever going to happen in whatever I'm doing. So if I don't enjoy the journey, and it's all about the anticipation or the anxiety, unfortunately, of the destination, yeah. You can't enjoy the journey.
Yeah.
So just stop it.
Makes sense. Is there anything else before we close out our third mentoring session together that you wanted to share with the audience or anyone in a retail store that would...
Well, there's no right and wrong, first of all.
Yeah.
And there are no mistakes. I think there's variations. And if we just say, if we keep saying, no, that's wrong, that's not right, I think we're not allowing ourselves any growth, room for growth. So keep in mind, there are no mistakes, only variations. And base your business on learning. So in my knitting, and I have a variation further down, which is not a mistake, but maybe I did something that wasn't according to pattern. I don't go back and ravel it down to that point. I look at it and go, you know what? I don't like that. I'm not going to do it again. And that's my life. I look at things, decisions I've made in the past, and I decide, you know what? That wasn't a good choice. I'm not going to do that again. And it's a growth opportunity. If you keep going back or in life beating yourself up about bad choices, you never get ahead.
Yeah, so you really get stuck in a downward spiral. Yeah.
And move on. Look at it. And same with your knitting. Leave that stitch, and it's a variation, and move on and finish your project and go on to the next one. And that's my life.
Excellent. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for all your wisdom and for sharing so openly kind of your life journey so far.
Thanks, Nancy. Yeah. Appreciate it.
All right. And we'll keep you inspired and informed, audience. And thanks, Mike Cabea, for our sound engineering and editing and photography this evening. And audience, you'll get a chance to see some really cool pictures. So stay tuned. We'll see you next Monday.